Hey everyone, you are listening to the special edition of EngageCast, a podcast about riveting ghost stories. In this edition of EngageCast, we are on a quest to find a few answers related to how has consumer behavior evolved during the COVID phase, the adaptation of new consumer engagement strategies, and critical focus areas for brands in 2020. In episode 3, we chatted with Abhishek Shetty of Celio. And he shared some pretty interesting insights about what's happening in the fashion and retail industry. In today's episode, Priyam Jha, Brand Marketing Manager at WebEngage, will be speaking with Abhishek Patil. Patil leads product and growth at Cred, a platform specifically designed for credit card rewards. So what are we waiting for? Let's get going.
Thank you so much for joining us, Abhishek. It is fantastic to have you here for another episode of EngageCast.
Thanks a lot, Priyam, for having me for the second time. I think situation has changed. When we shot the EngageCast 1, I think it's almost a year back. And now the situation is altogether different. I'm in a different company and I think the situation in the market is also different.
Absolutely. We have been trying to understand a little bit of the impact that COVID has had on businesses. And we are talking to people from different industries and I thought it would be a great idea to have you on board. Get to hear a few of your insights, few of your learnings that you have garnered in the past month or so. So, like I mentioned, the very first question that I'm asking everybody is being very direct. How has COVID-19 impacted you as a professional, the brand that you work for, and of course, the industry overall that you operate in, Abhishek?
Sure. So, I think I'll be more generic in terms of how it has impacted. I think everybody knows that consumer spending is down by close to 60%, right? And consumer spending basically dictates everything that happens in fintech in general. If you look at news, OTT, delivery, they are almost flat or increasing. Online learning is increasing. I think I just saw a report by Google Trends on what people are searching in India. And there is a 380% increase in people searching for online learning. That's pretty crazy, right? But if you look at fintech, I think fintech is driven by two things. First is shopping behavior, and second is people, it's basically online shopping and people going out, having fine dining, doing a bunch of stuff on the consumer, non-essential side, right? Which has gone down, and that has caused tremendous amount of impact on the number of transactions that happen, right? But at the same time, if you look at donations as a category, fintech players which processes donations, I think that is just skyrocketed, right? How they do it. I think for me, right, I think it's the great time to make sure that, you know, the marketing channels that have been overlooked because of the scaled channels, I think it's the best time to work on content. It's best time to work on inbound. It's the best time to optimize funnels, things which have had taken backseat when you were going all out. I think this is the best time to actually, you know, make sure that, you know, your funnels are right, your things are in place. I think this is the best time to do that.
Sure. I'm glad you said that because we're getting a lot of similar feedback from other folks that we're talking to as well. It's time to look inwards and figure out how to kind of sort out your product, figure out ways to make it more intuitive. A lot of those insights we are getting. I'm glad you mentioned a few of those pointers about discretionary spending being down because of which fintech has been directly affected, right? Logically so. Now, of course, that is the short-term impact that we have directly seen right now. What kind of a long-term impact do you foresee, especially for a brand like Cred? Since there are so many uncertainties involved in the market, nobody really knows when everything is going to be back to normal. So is there any kind of extended long-term impact that you guys foresee and have you guys planned for it?
Sure. So I think I wouldn't specifically talk about Cred, but I also have interacted with a bunch of folks in the past few weeks, and it's common that startups are going in general on a cost-saving mode, so necessarily increasing their runway. So nobody would want to raise money sooner because it's going to be difficult raising money now, right? Because the sheer amount of liquid capital in the market is lower and startups are the riskiest best bet. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think in general, everybody has started talking about, I think I read somebody's tweet, I think it was VVS, that the profits of the companies are going to be the new market capital of the companies.
I think we had started
there from the WeWork era and the Uber IPOs, that, you know, you have to get to a cash positive and profitable ways. But I think everybody started preparing towards becoming a more viable business. Basically, dhande ki baat has come in picture. And the whole thing of just raising money and, you know, scaling on top of VC money is going to go away. It's a cash positive business as a business can sustain. I think everybody just trying to make sure that happens for their business.
Awesome. I'm glad you mentioned that it's VCs were trying to probably smarten up a little bit as far as sharing capital with companies was concerned. And it definitely feels like a stress test for a lot of companies where they are understanding that things have really fastened up as far as profitability is concerned. I remember reading something about Amazon's $4 billion profit coffers being entirely used for COVID benefits. So all of their profits that they made last year has now been spent to gear up for COVID-19 and its impact. So most definitely that is something that is going to be true. And that has definitely impacted a lot of marketing functions as well for a lot of different brands. The way marketing itself functions is very capital intensive, at least as far as consumer businesses are concerned. But now that is not the case. And the first functions that were affected were marketing, of course. So how has your marketing strategy changed right now, considering consumer behavior has changed and market scenario has changed? What is it that is now different for you?
Sure. I think marketing has changed depending on the industry and the goals that the companies have, right? Marketing has changed for different stages of the company. So companies which are very early or which are very mature, right? They have a different aspect to look at this. Overall level, of course, everybody has reduced ad spending in general on the marketing side. I think they have gone very particular. I think that's something like the organization that I have been part of, we were always particular about every dollar we spent on marketing. So I don't see any changes there on the companies that I work for. But in general, what we have started questioning is there a better way to do this, right? I think that's something that has come in place. Is there a better way to do this? I think if you look at World War I, World War II, every war has taught us how to become more productive.
Yes.
I think this is the World War III, and this is going to help us. How do we become more productive, right? Like, how do we become better at doing every type of marketing, getting customer, retaining them, making money off them? Because getting the share of wallet is going to be tougher and tougher from any business in the world.
Absolutely.
Right? Because the perceived value of like earning $10 an hour is going to be more and more difficult because there are a lot of people in the market who, you know, do that job, and there are lesser jobs available, and that's going to happen. Right? So I think that's the major focus, right? Basically questioning the second degree questions, right? Like why do the why, right? So I think that is something that is changing.
Awesome. So I'm so glad you mentioned that the perceived value that people are definitely going to be looking for right now. That is something that brands will definitely have to crack. And does that mean that you mentioned that everything needs to be questioned, everything needs to be basically really, really checked properly as to why we are doing it? Asking all of those whys have become important when marketing and engagement come into the question. What are those three things that you really want to drill down on?
I think not just for CRED, but any organization would be first looking at retaining their existing customers. How do we make sure that, you know, how do we retain those customers in the least cost possible? Second would be if you want to acquire new customers, how are you going to actually make money off them, right? So don't acquire customers which you can't make money off, right? I think that's second. And third is when you acquire customers at scale, what kind of efficiency can you impart in that particular process, right? Focus is more on retention, engagement, deeper engagement. When I say engagement, it's going to be very deeper engagement than just using one or two features of the product. And when you acquire a new customer, how can you make them a deeper engaged user? I think that's going to be core, right? And then, of course, monetization is always there. But I don't think companies are going to you know, increase prices or charge new customers more, because there is of course a cost incentive that has to be given for a friction action, right? So if an app, say for example, take an example of Zerodha, right? Zerodha has a very tedious process of actually getting on board, but the app is so amazing that people go and do it, right? So even if Zerodha doesn't incentivize, people will still go and do it, right? But compare that to another mutual fund investments app, which requires, or a stock investment app, which requires that process and doesn't have that much great UI. You have to incentivize in some or the other way. So that's, I think that's what's going to be the focus.
Brilliant, brilliant. I'm glad that you mentioned the point of acquiring users with a lot more sense now. I'm having a few chats with a few other folks as well in the fintech space. And they have mentioned that it's basically about improving the quality of the leads, or rather the users that they now bring on board, ensuring that they actually end up spending some kind of money, or rather they end up extracting some value. How do you ensure that happens, Abhishek, and that too at scale?
I think for me, the orgs that I've worked for, we always were focused on not just overall numbers, but we were looking at how many of those numbers will retain if all the incentive on the platform is removed, right? And that's when you get undiscounted demand, right, for your platform. I think that is going to be derived largely by what kind of customers do you acquire, what kind of personas do they have, what kind of salary patterns, what kind of spending powers they have, what kind of behavior are they exhibiting on shopping, traveling, experiential travel, right? All the essential versus non-essential spends, and what kind of consumer are you getting in? If your consumer is not going to spend a lot of money, chances are higher you are not going to make money off that, right? Because that consumer has already gone on always save mode, right? And that's going to be tricky. But if you look at the apps that you will definitely use, I'll just go specific about apps, right?
Absolutely.
Certain apps you have to use, right? You cannot have normal functioning. And I think those apps, like look at this, right? We are on a Zoom call, right? I never imagined I would pay for a Zoom subscription before this, right? I always thought that, you know, virtual will not take over because office communication is super important. But now I do master classes and I have paid like $40 for a webinar subscription, right? Which I never thought I will buy, right? I always thought that I will get a nice place, will do a nice master class, but now I have to do it, right? So I think it's going to be a very conscious effort at that place.
Brilliant. Which brings me to the next question. I mean, we are engaging with so many of these new apps and softwares, and digital transformation has sped up. Very likely that it is going to continue in that direction, definitely in the near future. So it's very important for brands to basically engage with users the right way, because it connects with, because it extends in so many ways where you onboard the right users with the right set of expectations as well. Right now, considering COVID has hit us and hit us in ways that we are still reeling from the impact, what is the best user engagement strategy for consumer businesses? And when I am on the topic, for definitely somebody in the fintech space such as yourself.
I think it depends. It depends on, are you going volumes or are you going niche? How are you thinking about, you know, how do you measure your success of your business? Is it number of transaction or is it the GMV processed, or it's both? A lot of time it's different during different objectives. But from a deeper engagement perspective, I would say it's important that your core functionality is the top notch. So if you are say a UPI player, your core functionality has to be the number one, right? There's no issue. There should not be any issue in that. And on top of that, there should be a reason why you should exist, right? And it shouldn't be just the one functionality. I think people are going to, fintech is becoming a feature now, right? It's now no more a product, right? Everybody wants to get into fintech, and you will see a lot more players coming in now with everything going online. I think engagement is largely going to be driven by how many of those features are corely adding value to a particular user. It shouldn't be like I have 50 features and the user is using 30. But at what engagement level? So it has to be deeper, right? To put you in different perspective, it should be muscle memory to use that features, right? So if I tell you that, you know, if you use Slack at WebEngage, if Slack is removed, will you miss it like crazy? right? Is there a very strong, deeper engagement there? I think I will miss. I actually wrote something about Slack 4 days back, right? I said if Slack is removed, a lot ton of my communication with the team is going to get hampered, right? So that's the kind of engagement I have. So everybody needs to find out that one thing or two things that is going to be superbly engaging to the users. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be you launch a superficial product, somehow people use it, then they forget it, you acquire new users, they again use it for some time and then lose out. That's not going to work. You need core clusters of users who are addicted to your product. And I don't know what that engagement is for every product, but for fintech product, it's going to be core functionality to be has to be top-notch. And on top of that, you should have value addition features.
Super. Now, while we are on this topic of engagement, I'm going to delve a little deeper to try and understand a problem that a lot of marketers are facing right now. It's basically a communication strategy, right? Everybody wants to ensure that they end up adding the right value and the brand resonates the right message to the end user. So what are the top three priorities right now as far as communication strategy is concerned for a marketer that they really need to focus on?
I think it's, I don't think we had this much technological advancement when a previous, you know, even SARS or World Wars were here, right? I think it's a very exceptional case right now, right? Like there is no playbook for this. Nobody has been trained to do this, right?
Which is what we're trying to do now in this podcast. Absolutely.
Right. So I think if you look at a lot of brands, right, if you have checked out Ogilvy's template that they released out recently around communications and brand strategy, a lot of big brands, if you look at Coca-Cola to PepsiCo to the world's, they have gone blank. They have not put anything out because...
Radio silence, right?
Because that, if it backfires, it's going to backfire in an immense way, right? Because if people are dying and your community is saying that 50% off on a pizza, chances are higher you are going to get bashed all over, right? So you have to be very cognizant what are you pitching, right? I'll give you a simple example. When RBI announced that you can pay, you know, you can delay your payments on loans by 3 months, we actually released an article, right, saying you can delay those payments by 3 months, but still the interest is going to get charged on this, which is very, which is something that is adding value to the user. So we did some PR around it. We did few campaigns around it, right? But it was never that, you know, you come on credit and pay your credit card bills. It was always that take care of your finances, right? And not even pitching us, right? It has to be taking care of the users. If you're not sounding that and asking people to download, click, or, you know, submit your information, that's going to have an impact. And platforms such as say, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, these platforms, you have to be very cognizant because you don't know what is trending on that platform for that day. And you might be saying something else, and there might be something else that's going on in that geo or in that micro market, right? So you have to be very cognizant. That's point number one. Point number two is when you're speaking about something, don't try to oversell your brand. I think that's just generic, but in pandemic, because people are so scared, right, in a way, you should be very cognizant how you portray, right? For example, I'll give an example. You shouldn't sound very negative when you are trying to communicate something. You should sound positive on, you know, it's simpler and you can do it, right, on that line, right? So I think that is very important. So I think these two pointers from a communication standpoint.
Fantastic. And I also like the fact that you mentioned there was this theme that you were trying to explore, I think, about being more empathetic, definitely trying to add more value by way of education. I think the empathy theme, it's become very, very prominent right now. There's so many brands that are going that route. They're being more empathetic. They're trying to humanize the message at the end of the day. Even some B2B brands, industrial brands, like Siemens, for example, did something of that sort very recently, using education and, of course, trying to use empathy as a theme in this time and not oversell the brand, or the brand proposition right now is very, very key. So I'm noticing a lot of consumer brands are doing the same thing. They're humanizing their communication, and empathy has come out as a central theme, as a dominant theme right now for engaging with the users at large. Do you think empathy as a theme is here to stay, or it is something which is very, very seasonal because of COVID and it's probably going to vanish 6 months or 12 months down the line?
I would actually take a one step back, right? Like, I think brands use whatever helps them stay, right? A lot of time it's empathy in a situation. I think empathy is like a continuous play, but a lot of time you also need some other things, right? Like incentivization or, you know, having clickbaity things for a lot of brands, which are content brands, right? That is going to be an experimentation, right? I am not sure what will happen after 3-4 years. Will brands be so much empathetic that they are right now? One thing to be genuinely empathetic like Amazon, and other thing like, you know, just getting another skin for some time, right? I think that's
exactly.
So I don't think every brand will be empathetic, but I think few brands that I've worked for and I currently work for will definitely be empathetic towards
customers. Awesome, awesome. Any interesting campaigns that come to your mind which you really felt were bang on with respect to the whole scenario right now, and campaigns that you really enjoyed with respect to their communication?
I think the campaigns were, you know, the Amitabh Bachchan forgetting his glasses. I think that just started because it was very genuine, and I think nobody charged for it, right? So it was purely out of helping out. I haven't seen a better campaign than that. I think that's the best campaign that I've seen so far in the month.
Awesome, awesome. Now, there's this one question that I am asking a lot of people because of the nature of the pandemic that we are all experiencing. I mean, COVID-19 is an unprecedented event, right? There, no precedent exists for this. Some people said probably this September 11 attacks, but in the near history that we have all experienced, most of us have experienced, there's nothing that has really affected the world together at the same point of time, right? So businesses have, of course, been affected everywhere in varying degrees. Some have been affected very heavily. Okay. Do businesses such as Cred have a doomsday plan for something like this, where they foresee such a future where spending dries up, liquidity dries up, and the core business proposition gets affected so seriously? Is there a doomsday plan of that sort at Cred, which is in action right now?
Correct. I'm not a spokesperson for Cred, but what my personal opinion is not necessarily as a Cred. It doesn't represent Cred as a brand, but what my personal opinion is, you shouldn't have a plan B. Plan B should be follow planning, right? I don't think there's a doomsday plan, right? I think it's super important that if you build for your consumers, and if you look at consumers that Cred typically targets versus my previous brand, which was Tanzo. Tanzo was purely focused on masses, right? And it's more on the geo level targeting. Cred is very structured towards how they look at customers, how do we segment them, how do we look at affluent customers. So I don't think affluent customers are going to save money and not spend anything for the next few years. I'm fearful that because of this COVID, the inequality in the market is going to go higher, right? So poor people are going to become more poor because there will be less jobs. If you look at us, right? Like after work from home has happened, our salaries are almost constant, right? So, but the people who are daily wage workers and the lower strata, economic strata of the society, they are going to face that one. So I don't think that's going to affect the affluent, but it's definitely going to affect the lower and the lower middle classes, right? So I think that's what I think. So I don't think there's a doomsday plan to answer the question.
Super. Thank you for satisfying my sci-fi curiosities. One question, of course, which comes to mind because we are on the question of uncertainty, what the future really involves. One thing is definitely for sure is that people don't really want to engage in discretionary spending right now. They are fearful that there is a recession in the market. There are recessionary trends seen everywhere. Jobs are being lost. And demand and supply is also affected. So people are probably saying it's better off that we don't spend right now. We spend later. But what is that later is, of course, something which nobody really knows. So how do you work to reignite demand for the future? What, as a marketer, what do you do right now?
So I don't think apart from religion and incentivizing using money, anybody can change natural behavior of a consumer. You and me, what we can do as a product and growth owners is make sure that whatever your current consumer is asking you, make sure you fulfill that at the top-notch quality, right? I don't think you can like, until you are government and have a stimulus package in India, I don't think how are you going to get more money at the hands of people who have lost their jobs?
True.
That's not something that can be done by a push notification, right?
True.
So I think that answers the question.
Fantastic, fantastic. Thanks a lot. And the very last question before we end this chat is, of course, again, a little bit about a sci-fi future that we are all headed towards. Do you think the future of work is remote?
You love in general sci-fi.
It's absolutely. Amazing. Absolutely. This is something we all used to read about, dream about. And we are literally living a sci-fi movie. That's what I feel. But unfortunately, it's not the best scenario for everyone. This is not what I really envisioned Doomsday going. I thought it was going to be a lot of fun.
This is definitely not fun. Staying at home is definitely not fun.
Yeah, it's a very 2020 kind of a Doomsday scenario. Very hipster. But my last question for the day is, of course, about the work situation that we are in. Do you think the future of work is going to be remote?
I think I am very optimistic towards the future. I actually used to overhear these conversations that working remote is not productive, right? I have spent 45 to 50 days in self quarantine now, and I can tell you by my own experience that I am, if not 2x, I'm at least 3x more productive than what I was in office. Of course, there are limitations in terms of having the friendly chats with your team and becoming, at CRED, we are a family. We are not a team. We are a family, right? So I think that feeling, it's very important you have those chats, right? I think that's not happening. But imagine remote work is going to open up so many doors. If you want to build a great product, a global product, you can literally hire anybody in the world. So your resources are no more limited by just India. And that's a great opportunity, right? Because I was talking to somebody who is interviewing at some Google and Microsofts of the world, and the person asked me, right, if it's remote, should I charge less? And if it's at that place, should I charge more? And I was like, oh, I did not think about this, right? So there might be two CTCs now with companies. One is if you want that employee to come to office, and one is if you are giving the flexibility to work from home.
Makes sense.
I'm just feeding on this, but like, this might be true in a few months or a few years, right?
Absolutely.
Remote will allow people to really value their time. Yeah. I think in India, we don't value time because we don't have hourly wages. In the US, everybody values time because everything is hourly wages.
Yeah.
I think that is for an Indian ecosystem that's going to change.
Great point. I think that's a fantastic insight. Definitely. I most definitely feel that. And I just want to add that I think starting 2020, in the next couple of years, I think we are going to see the rise of a lot of new businesses, a new breed of businesses who are going to be servicing a lot of the new needs that have come up, which obviously because of COVID-19 and its results. I think it's a very interesting time we live in. One last question, I think, before we let you go is, what kind of an economic revival timeline do you foresee, Abhishek? Because everything is so uncertain right now. The lockdown keeps getting extended, and we are not really sure when things are going to be back to normal. What do you think is that timeline for us?
Hmm. To be really honest, I am not no health expert, right? But whatever I hear and read across the websites and the same amount of information that everybody has access to, what I definitely feel is jobs that can be done work from home are going to become work from home sooner or later. I think they have already become, people are getting addicted to working from home. Even if they are ranting on social saying, hey, I don't like work from home, trust me, when they go back to all physical offices and when they come back home, they'll say work from home was better, right? I think the timeline that we're looking at, I don't think it's less than 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, right? Because we don't know what's the impact of weather. Also, because of restrictions lifted, and I think we were speaking before we started recording this, is the liquor lines that are happening, right? I don't know what has gone into this, because this is going to just stretch the whole timeline, right?
Sure.
If it just explodes, and India hasn't seen, specifically our top tier cities haven't seen like a great peak. I would say the worst peak. I'm very fearful of the fact that this is happening, that people are behaving as if Corona has gone out. And that is a concern. So until we have like full self-control on ourselves, there is no timeline. It's going to always extend. So I think that's my two cents on it. But I'm no health expert. So
That's completely all right. Thank you so much. And on that note, we will end this conversation. Thank you so much once again, Abhishek, for agreeing to do this. I know you are a busy guy with a busy schedule, but we really enjoyed having this conversation with you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Priyam. Thanks a lot for having me here. It's been a great chat. Thanks a lot for this.
Thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you gained some really crucial insights. If you did, don't forget to share it with your friends, families, and colleagues and help us spread the word. In the next episode, we will be speaking with Sonu Sharma of Travel Triangle to understand the sector which has taken the biggest blow due to COVID-19, that is travel. Till then, stay home, stay safe, and take care of yourselves. See you soon.